on ESPN alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. This is episode 350, where we celebrate the fact that anyone, Herc, truly anyone, can show up to a Liga MX game, including a desperate housewife.
She was celebrating not the goal, but new investment, I think. That's what she was celebrating. I'd celebrate that, too.
Look at that. Somebody's looked into the rundown. We will be talking about the new investment in the team that Eva Longoria has a bit piece share in, Necaxa, a little bit later in the show. We're also going to be talking about the end of the Liga MX season, which she was down in Mexico for, a look ahead to Liguilla. We'll be also looking back, Herc, on AC Milan against Juventus, where we had not one, not two, not three, but four U.S. men's national teamers involved. And speaking of national teamers, some Mexican internationals that could, Herc, be on the move. We will discuss all that in this edition of Football Americas. But let's start in Major League Soccer with the one and only Lionel Messi. Inter Miami visiting the New England Revolution on Saturday in front of 65,000 plus. That's how many were in attendance to watch Messi play on turf. Revs were up 1-0 very early in this game, but Messi with the equalizer here, Herc, in the 32nd minute.
Ah, what a ball through. What a touch. I believe it's Robert Taylor with the silky ball in through here. It's hard, soft feet by Messi, and then Messi gives him the hips, gives him the eyes, gives him the goal.
His 8th league goal of the season. 67th minute in the second half, still 1-1. Nope, make it 2-1. Messi with another goal.
Yeah, keep your eye on Marc-Anthony Kay, who's basically shadowing Messi around everywhere, except for this play. I don't know how he loses Messi there. He does. Leaves the most dangerous man on the planet alone, facing his own goal.
That was Messi's 9th league goal of the season. How about an assist? Yep, he got one here to his old buddy Luis Suarez for the 4-1.
All right, a couple things here. Kamaski with the outside of the boot, little flick to Messi. Messi with the hard ball in. Watch the indoor touch by Luis Suarez. Watch how he rolls the ball to him, sets himself up, uses the defender as a screen. Golazo.
Suarez, 7th of the season. Miami wins 4-1. They are first place in the Eastern Conference. So, Herc, Messi does it again. What more can we say about this guy in Major League Soccer?
Nothing else. Mm. I mean,
it should make for a short segment.
It's the best player I've ever seen playing Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a secret. I don't think it's debatable. You look at this guy's numbers. He's got 11 goals, 9 assists in the last 10 games in all comps. 9 league goals in the last 6 games. Mm-hmm. He's played 24 games in Major League Soccer since he signed with Inter Miami. He's got 22 goals, 11 assists. Ooh. And I'm talking about primary assist, not the hockey assist that, you know, eventually Major League Soccer adds to stat the uh-huh. or pad the stats. This guy has been as good as advertised. He's been that player. This is his playground, and he's making every single player, every single opponent look amateur. It's been that good. And when he's not been good, there's been a reason for it. Mm. It's been injury related. But when he's healthy, when he is fit, when he is on the field, he's unstoppable.
Were you surprised that we got him on turf? Because I think that was always a concern. Certainly late last year, would he play on turf? And if we go back to the big guys, Zlatan, it was kind of a no-go on turf. Thierry Henry, even before that, a no-go on turf. I was surprised, honestly, to see him start and play this game, given the fact that it was on turf. But then I guess when you consider there's no more CONCACAF Champions Cup for them, League's Cup still a ways away, and the fact that there's 65,000 there to see him. Zlatan wasn't pulling that, with all due respect. Henry wasn't doing that. With all due respect. So you can see why Messi would play on the turf, despite the fact that it's not the best surface. And actually, we saw Herc, a Revs player, get hurt towards the end of the game on the
That's
turf.
That's right. Yep. You did get hurt on the turf, and you can make of that what you will. Mm-hmm. I have played on turf before. I'm not a fan of turf. I've had knee injuries before, and I can tell you what my knee feels on turf. It's not an ideal situation to be on, not an ideal surface. Now, was I surprised? Yes, because even though when he signs with Inter Miami, mm-hmm. he lets us know that turf is no problem for him, that he's played on it in his youth academy days when he was at La Masia in Barcelona, and there wouldn't be an issue, he would still play. That's one thing you say to appease the people at the moment, but to do it, and I think you're right, the responsibility that he feels, mm-hmm. that he holds to the people who purchase a ticket and come out and see him, and big time people. I'm talking about lots of people. You saw Arrowhead. It was Arrowhead in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and the people that spent their good money and filled a football stadium. You saw now Gillette Stadium. The Patriots pull in numbers. Like, excuse me, not even the Patriots pulled in those type of numbers. The last time you had a soccer game that even came close to this was when the New England Revolution made it to their final, the first final in their franchise history against the Galaxy, a final which they lost, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Who was there on that Galaxy team?
I was there.
Who was there on that Galaxy team?
Carlito Ruiz, El Pescadito, with the goal. But what I'm trying to tell you is those type of moments merit that type of showing. This is a normal thing for Messi.
At the beginning of the segment, you said he's the best you've ever seen. It's not much of a debate. Yet if we go back to the beginning of the season, you remember we did kind of our golden boot picks, our MVP picks. Yes. I went heavy on Inter Miami. I picked Luis Suarez, who, by the way, has seven now, came off the bench here against the Revs, still got a goal for golden boot. But I picked Messi for MVP. I really thought, obviously, the storylines would be there, but I thought statistically, like, he would just dominate. You were less inclined to believe that. You thought that there would be more absences, that the numbers wouldn't be there. I mean, 9 goals, 7 assists in 7 MLS games. Yeah. I think he's obviously going to be the MVP if this keeps up. The question then is Vela's record safe? Is that 34 goals safe? Because at this clip, he's going to get there.
No, it's not. You know what makes it safe? It's going to be safe. And you know what makes it safe?
You said statistics wouldn't be on Inter-Miami's side. So far, they have been.
So far, they have been. But you got to go a long season for them to continue to be on that side.
We're a third of the way in.
And he's only 2 goals ahead of Chicho Arango. And he's got Danny Bowanga, you know, heating up. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have other teams who are not going to have these absences. And nobody ever put the talent of Lionel Messi or Luis Suarez on... in question. I told you Luis Suarez would have a field day in Major League Soccer. That we shouldn't believe what we heard about his knee. We shouldn't believe all these other things about him being old, et cetera, et cetera. They will do well when healthy, when present. But there is a Copa America. And until we see what happens with the aftermath of that Copa America is, I still think I'm playing against these guys. I'll bet against these guys because Messi will always want to play for Argentina, will always want to give his maximum effort for Argentina. And every game that they will be available to play in Copa America may be the final, may be a heavy workload, and then League's Cup. I don't think all these games in a congested calendar are in favor of Lionel Messi playing as many league games as we think. Now, the numbers are impressive, mm-hmm. and certainly you can say if he plays 10 more league games, he could probably win Golden Boot, wrap that up, sure. But breaking Carlos Vela's record of 34 goals, 15 assists mm-hmm. in a Major League Soccer season, in a season where you have Copa America and League's Cup, I'm not buying that yet.
Yes or no answer here. How close, what percentage of like the best of Inter Miami do you think we've seen? Have we seen like close to it yet?
No.
Okay, so... No. To that end, that's why I think you can count on Messi. Because they're starting to get healthy now. Campana's back, Taylor's back, Kramaski's back, and he scores. They're signing players every week.
Farias
got another
back.
Paraguayan international.
No, you're right.
Now, right.
Rojas will be there. Fine, fair, great.
They're only going to get better. He's only going to get better
but
with these
players. But he's got to be on the field for that. And if you're playing in Copa America, you're not.
I mean, he's showing up on a turf and dropping 2 goals and an assist.
That's all we could ask for.
In a meaningless MLS regular season.
That's all we could ask for.
There's no reason to suggest that he's going to stop doing that.
So you say he breaks Carlos Vela's record, yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, based on this start, yes. I've made it a policy on this show. I'm not going to bet against Messi. And I'm certainly not, based on the fact that, honestly, with a half team around him, because everybody's hurt, he's doing this.
It's hard to argue against you when we see what he does to Major League Soccer mm-hmm. opposition on a team that's clearly hampered by injury.
Yeah, yeah. I guess part of this is also how bad the New England Revolution were, right? You can't talk about this 4-1. I know they had the flu and all that stuff.
But the flu.
It's a team that, well, the flu made Jordan better. It did not make the Revs better.
And
they got,
Matt
what,
Polster
one win
and Mark Anthony Kay. I'm sure it's not easy to play with the flu, especially against a player mm-hmm. like Messi, but call it whatever you want. They could have been hyped up on Red Bulls and had the best night of their life, and it still would have been very difficult against this version of Messi.
Yep, there you have it. New England Revolution struggling. Inter Miami, meanwhile, first place in Major League Soccer's Eastern Conference.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
All right, so from one player who is lighting up MLS right now to maybe another guy who could be doing it in the not-too-distant future. Chucky Lozano has been linked with a move to San Diego FC. It was first reported by Tom Bogert. There you see him over at The Athletic, followed up by Rodolfo Landeros at Fox Deportes. The expansion side is expected to pay PSV around $12 million for the 28-year-old Mexican international who would join San Diego for their debut season in 2025. Herc, do we like it for Chucky? Do we like it for San Diego? And do we like it for El Tri?
Ooh, I like what you just said. Mm. Okay. Separate these,
yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
I love how you separate it. Do I like it for Chucky Lozano? I do. I like it for Chucky Lozano. Listen, he's been in Europe for going on 7 years. Mm-hmm. I think clearly his best years when it comes to playing European football are behind him. He had back-to-back seasons of 17 goals scored in the Eredivisie. After that, had a one double-digit season that we see right there at 2020-2021 with Napoli in all comps where they won the Coppa Italia, I believe. Mm-hmm. And since that, it's not been the same productivity. He has struggled. He's clearly not the same player since the 2018 World Cup where he had that great moment against Germany, and it was that Chucky Lozano. He's a different type of player right now. For Chucky and his future going forward to cash in this way with a team like San Diego in Major League Soccer in that area can maybe revive his career in a way that it has for other players who have used Major League Soccer to revive their career. Carlos Vela, Sebastián Giovinco, if you will. You remember when Sebastián Giovinco broke out to Major League Soccer, started scoring goals left and right.
Are you suggesting that this is a pathway to a bigger role for Chucky Lozano with the national team? Because my first thought is, what does it mean for the national team? It means the end.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying it's a way for him to use a lower level to gain confidence and maybe mm-hmm. use that going
Which
forward.
Which is what we kind of thought would happen at PSV.
We did.
But it didn't really occur.
Not yet. Not yet. And listen, they will certainly be champions in the Eredivisie, and he certainly will have another title to his mm-hmm. name, but not one where he played a massive part in.
Yeah.
Certainly, if we look at the CONCACAF players at PSV, Malik Tillman, Ricardo Pepi, Serginho Dest, Chucky Lozano, majority of people would have bet on Chucky Lozano being the starlet of that team, being the guy
for
who
sure, for
the
sure.
most, especially come from Napoli level down.
Oh, especially the money they spent. The money suggested he would be the
that
guy.
That wasn't the case. Now, no. Do I like this for San Diego? From a marketing standpoint, I do. Ooh. It makes a splash.
Okay.
You need a splash. But do not compare this to Carlos Vela and LAFC. And the reason I go down this route
okay.
is because Tom Penn is the president of San Diego FC. He was the president of LAFC, and he was instrumental in bringing Carlos Vela to LAFC. And Carlos Vela was in a much different moment than Chucky Lozano. Mm-hmm. Carlos Vela is a much different player than Chucky Lozano. Carlos Vela is a very talented player. Chucky Lozano has talent, but he's more of a use my physical attributes to be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And in this league, unless you supply him with the right type of brain and technical ability around him, it's going to be difficult for him to create things by himself. Carlos Vela was in a different scenario. In a moment with the Mexican national team, he could still step in and be the guy in the Mexican national team if he wanted to. In a moment with Real Sociedad, he was coming off back-to-back seasons where he was very good for Sociedad, and he was sitting at the table with Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi and that type of player in La Liga. Mm-hmm. That's who he was. He's a different player. Chucky Lozano can be a good player? Yes. Can he be the same type of player as Carlos Vela was for LAFC? No, I don't see him getting anywhere close to 34 goals, 15 assists that Carlos Vela had in that record year, or maybe doing half of what Carlos Vela has done in his Major League Soccer career. I see that being a little bit more difficult for Chucky Lozano to be that main character on a team.
Yeah, it's bad for the national team in the same way that Carlos Vela coming back was bad, but it's not as important. If you think back to 2018, Juan Carlos Osorio basically built that team around Vela. So to have Vela have a big drop, La Liga to MLS 2018, which is, I think, a much different drop than current Eredivisie to 2024 MLS, 6 months before the World Cup? I think that had a big impact on Vela and then right. by default,
right.
the national team. This is different because of what Chucky no longer is.
Correct.
And that's the reality. He is no longer A, that guy, but B, no longer does the national team kind of revolve around him.
No.
So if he drops off a level after the Copa America ahead of the next World Cup, you could say, all right, well, hopefully the other guys on the team, you know, can make it work. For Chucky, I think it's a little bit sad because I think it's his acknowledgement that the European journey has ended, that he's no longer good enough for that level. You remember the conversation we had with Hector Herrera?
I do.
And he told us what Chucky said to him when Achiacha, at an older age, came over. He was like, yo, bro, what are you doing? So the fact that Chucky now is willing to consider this tells me, even though he was critical maybe or questioning of somebody else, he's now seeing that this is the same best bet for him. And that, to me, for a guy who clearly wanted to stay in Europe, because this, not this offer, but another MLS offer, was probably available to him last summer. He clearly wanted to stay in Europe, and he's clearly found out he's not at that level anymore. And that's sad for a guy who at one point was destined for, I think, big things.
Yeah, but this is about cycles. Football's about moments. And maybe he can use this to revive his career. Listen, it's not the end-all, be-all at 28 years of age, but certainly it does the Mexican national team no favors. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But when you look at the amount of players they have in Europe, a player playing in a prominent role like he was in Napoli at one point, or like he was in the Eredivisie when he was there at the beginning, having a player like that leave certainly is a sign of what's to come.
All right, so Chucky Lozano could be leaving the Eredivisie for Major League Soccer. It sounds like another Mexican player may also soon be leaving the Eredivisie, but not for MLS, instead for the Premier League. Of course, we're talking Santiago Jimenez, who's currently at Feyenoord, but was spotted this weekend in London at the North London Derby, Arsenal and Spurs, both of whom he's been linked to. This, of course, a couple days after his agents met with representatives of AC Milan in Italy. Herc, what do you think is a better landing spot for Santi? Spurs or AC Milan?
Woo! You know, this was a talk we had, a segment we did about maybe 2-3 months ago. And I had mentioned how my dream spot for him would have been Spurs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you recall that.
You love the style of
Spurs. I love the style that Ancha proposes, what he tries to play. It's fast. It's in your face.
It's reckless. It's a little bit naive at times.
It is naive.
But as a forward, I guess, who cares? Right.
And if you're a forward that is dynamic, like I think Santi Jimenez is, you can do very well in a situation like that. If you are put in situations to succeed, I think the system just suits him better. I also think everybody wins here. You're getting a forward that maybe fits the piece of the puzzle that you're looking for, a dynamic forward who's goal dangerous, who gets in behind, who can play multiple positions in that front line. And also for Santi, it's a great level, the Premier League, but not necessarily the team at that toxic level where you need immediately.
Wow, I don't know about that. I think Spurs,
would you put it at the
high? Yeah, they're a big six club in London, man.
Yeah, but it's not as toxic if you look at other clubs like your United, Barcelona.
Toxic or not, pressure and immediate need to score.
Sure.
If he goes to Spurs or AC Milan.
Here's the thing with AC Milan. You're giving me these two. So here's the thing with AC Milan.
Two.
Stefano Pioli, all signs point to he's gone. He is out.
Right.
So you're going in a situation where you don't even know who the coach is. You're trying to bank on them rebuilding this club to fight in Serie A without knowing who the manager is, without knowing the style, without even knowing if this manager counts on you or not. And what is, I would say, not the most sure of things if you're a nine right now. Jovalic, who was there, the guy who was at Frankfurt and then went to... Frankfurt and then to Real Madrid. We see the lack of time that he has had there at AC Milan. They depended on Olivier Giroud, and rightfully so. You know, 36 years old or not, he was scoring goals. But it's more of a volatile position, if you want that nine spot, without even knowing what you're walking into. I would opt for Spurs, and especially because it's the Premier League. I'm sure it's a league that maybe suits him a little bit more with the style of how Spurs play.
So the question really here for me is he going to be a starter, like a guaranteed starter? And so when I look at both of these clubs, they fit into the category of I'm not sure.
Right.
These are very big clubs, very big leagues, lots of pressure. This is not that middle step to go from Feyenoord to a team where you know they're getting Santi to be the guy and he's going to have a leash because they don't really have other options. There's going to be other good choices at either of these clubs. For me, there's a case to be made here for Milan, and it's actually a little bit about what you're talking about, but I'm going to flip it. If it was Pioli, and we're going to talk about how AC Milan looks in big games, and we've talked about it a lot on the show because we watch for Pulisic, we watch for Musa. If it was Pioli staying, I would say no, don't stay. But I look at AC Milan, I look at how Pulisic did arriving in Serie A, how well his first season went.
Right.
Yunus Musa, obviously not as good of a season as Pulisic, but exceeded our expectations. I could see at AC Milan, Santiago Jimenez getting there and doing well much more likelier than I could at a club like Spurs, where you've got one, I think, more competition. You've got Son who can play through the middle. You've still got Richarlison who's on contract, I think, for at least another 2 or 3 years at Spurs.
Yeah.
At Milan, that opening's there. And the fact that you don't know who's going to be the next manager, if it's the right guy, I don't mind Serie A, because to me, Serie A is still a notch below the Premier League.
I agree.
And that's... I think, you know, that there might be some games in Serie A where Santi can maybe get a foothold in and then start to grow.
And that's
whereas in the Premier League, I agree with
you. But as a player heading into a situation that you don't know, like if your goal is to play regardless of the level which you want to play, you want a situation where you think you'll have an opportunity. How could you bank on going somewhere where there's no coach, where there's no certainty of who the coach will be, or what that style will be, or where you fit into those plans? I think that's the most important thing for Santi Jimenez. You look at Spurs on the other side. Sure, the level is harder, but if a team like Spurs is looking for you, and this is another thing, is a transfer fee.
Right.
You best bet that transfer fee is going to be a little higher than what we've heard about this $40 million or $30 million. That's going to be a lot higher. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind it as much if I'm Santi, a situation that I know, a coach that I trust, a level that I think is good, a team that plays more of my brand, instead of heading into the uncertainty of AC Milan.
You know who's putting in the work right now in the Santiago Jimenez camp? The agent.
Yes.
We see him at a game where he's been linked to both teams.
Yeah.
And now we've seen his, family and crew in Milan. So everybody who's not talking to Santiago Jimenez right now probably feels like they're behind in the pursuit.
She's been busy, man. Yep. And Santi Jimenez, his father, has been very instrumental in his career, almost playing a manager-like role. Mm-hmm. So the agent, she and his father have been everywhere with the... Trust me, it's been Sevilla that they've been to, Seville, last season. And now it's Milan and London. So we'll see where he goes.
Picking up those frequent flyer miles as they try to move Santiago Jimenez elsewhere in Europe. All right, let's stay in Italy right now. We'll stay on the topic of AC Milan. They were playing Juventus over the weekend on Saturday in a showdown between second and third place in Serie A. We, of course, had an eye on this one for all the Americans. Tim Weah getting the start for Juventus. Weston McKennie on the bench. He came on as a second-half sub, actually replacing Weah in the 71st minute. Christian Pulisic and Yunus Musah both in the starting 11 for Milan. The game itself, quite a snoozer. It ended 0-0, leaving Milan second in the table and Juventus third. One big takeaway, we did see Yunus Musah at right back. We saw Tim Weah at right wing back. And we know that right back position obviously is a position of huge need now for the U.S. with Serginho Dest injured. Your thoughts on that or any other big takeaways from the scoreless draw we saw in this game?
Yeah, Allegri doing his best to entertain us with the 0-0 football.
Who is more anti-football here, Allegri or Pioli? In a game where Allegri is the more expansive manager,
yes,
you have problems.
You do have problems. But this is par for the course.
Okay, Yunus.
And I don't mind Yunus as a right back. He obviously looks comfortable. Now, listen, if we want to make this into a... Because clearly there are problems with Serginho Dest's injury for the U.S. men's national team. I mean, clearly Joe Scally hasn't really given us plenty of confidence going forward in the very brief time that we have seen from him at right back. And I will point to the Uruguay game, pre-World Cup, and I will point to the game that we saw not too long ago from him against Jamaica in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal, where he struggled, and he struggled mightily. So if we don't have that trust going forward with Joe Scally, regardless of how well he's done at Gladbach, how well he's done in the Bundesliga, if you don't have that confidence with him going forward, you could do worse than a guy like Yunus Musah, who clearly is comfortable on the ball, clearly has some time at right back, right wing back, if you will. We've seen him play for Stefano Pioli. He's looked he's looked dangerous at times. He's looked comfortable. He's a guy that drives the ball going forward very well, connects very well in the final third. You could do worse than playing him or trying him at that right back position. And I would echo the same for Timothy Weah. He's had experience playing at Lille right and left back. It's in case of emergency break glass type of option with these two. I don't mind it one bit. And it's not because these two have really shown you great things going forward. It's more of what Joe Scally hasn't shown you when he's had the opportunity.
I'm thinking about kind of Milan in the big games, and we've had this conversation before. In this match specifically, zero shots on target, zero big chances created, 0.31 expected goals. We're going to talk about Musah and Pulisic. We're going to say they really didn't do much. The whole team didn't do much, and that continues to be an issue for AC Milan in these big games, to the point we were talking about earlier, Stefano Pioli, AC Milan, whether we would want to see Santiago Jimenez there. If you watch this game and you're thinking about it, of a player who could be going to Milan, you're saying this is not necessarily a place I want to be. That's the negative, though. I want to spin it to the positive.
That's circumstantial as well.
Sure.
Coming off seeing your bitter rival lift up a trophy, you know, in your stadium. I think it's a little circumstantial, but yes.
I don't think we can look past the fact that there's four U.S. internationals playing in this game. Three of them started, and actually the one who you probably most thought would start is the one that ended up on the bench in Weston McKennie. This is not just this year, but at any time, basically, over the last, 20, 30 years, in August, when you look at the biggest games on the European calendar, this is one of those games. And so to have four U.S. internationals participating is just staggering. It's something we wouldn't have thought about 10 years ago when we talk about U.S. players playing abroad. And it is unique in terms of this region. We're not talking about other players from Mexico, Canada, Central America, anywhere else. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that. One, it's a great victory for American soccer. But when we talk about the national team and we talk about expectations, and we are critical on this show, it's because of days like Saturday when you see four U.S. guys playing one of the biggest games in world football. This is truly the golden generation. We should expect them to dominate CONCACAF, and we should expect them to do things that they've never done before. I think that's fair when we're going to hype them up after a game like this.
Yeah, I'll go one further. You look at the positions that they're playing. Normally when you see players participating, whether it's in a region from CONCACAF participating in this type of event, it's a right back. It's a holding mid type position. Not the skill set players. You've seen players like Weston McKennie's having a career year, playing in the midfield, leading his team in assists. You have Christian Pulisic, who said double digits goals and assists, playing on the right wing or as a playmaker in the center. It's a type of positions and the type of teams that they're playing in.
There we have it. So we got three starters out of the four as far as U.S. players in that AC Milan-Juventus game, which ended in a scoreless draw.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Let's move on to a guy who's actually been making the headlines quite a bit of late, Jesse Marsh, who days after being linked to the Canada job, remember we talked about that last week, has now been linked to the South Korea job, most recently held, of course, by Jurgen Klinsmann, had him in the semifinals of the most recent Asian Cup. Some of the reports are claiming he's the top candidate, Marsh, for the South Korea job. He, of course, hasn't managed in 14 months since being let go at Leeds. Kirk, what do you make of this? Jesse Marsh to South Korea. If you were his advisor, and we know you're not, would you tell him to take the Canada job or the South Korea job?
Ooh, pick your poison, right, of dysfunctional federations. How do you want to
go? But also potentially very talented national teams, huh?
Yes, you could argue.
Relatively speaking.
Canada doesn't have the superstars that Korea has, you know? Sung playing at Spurs, Lee, Chang. There's some very good footballers playing in some very top setups. But if you look at this team in the Federation, South Korean Federation, off the heels of Jurgen Klinsmann and how dysfunctional that was in the Asian Cup, to where they are today and what's in store for them in the future, they just missed the Olympics.
Yep.
You know, it's the first time in 40 years that they've missed the Olympics. 1984 Los Angeles Olympics, the last time. They weren't part of the Olympics. This is a program that's expected to do things in their region. I don't know if I'd want that type of scrutiny, that type of hot potato and pressure with the language barrier as well, not being able to communicate properly with your players. And then you look at the other side, Canada, you don't have the language barrier, and this is football, world football. You can get around that, but it will be a little bit more difficult. And I'm sure that's not going to be anything new to Jesse Marsh. He had that in Austria. He had that in Germany with Leipzig. You just have to learn the language type. But certainly, there's more of a feel that's more of a moldable product on the Canadian side with more players that you could impact, Jesse could impact going forward to play his brand and potentially do something in a region where, or a football that really nobody expects anything of. He won't be under the same pressure as he would be if he was a South Korean manager. You'd have free reign to do as you will. And I think you'd have more of a role going forward to impact that federation than you would if you were in the South Korean Federation.
When you say pick your poison, are you suggesting you should take either of the jobs?
I'm suggesting that both are a bit of a hot potato, that both are dysfunctional, if you will. We know the problems that the Canadian Soccer Federation has with both teams, their men and women's. Mm-hmm. We know the problems that they have with the Canadian soccer business model and how they've sold pretty much the federation and national teams for parts going forward with their media deals. We know how bad the South Korean Federation has been lately. And it seems like all signs point to Hum Young-bo being kind of
your
that
former
guy,
teammate, right?
Former teammate of the Galaxy, just waiting in the wings to kind of take over. So why would you want to put yourself in that situation? I would go for Canada. I think even though the more high-profile job would certainly be South Korea.
You listed some of the tiebreakers that would go kind of in Canada's favor. The other one that's obvious to me is hosting the World Cup.
Right.
Right? If this is a job for the 2026 cycle, you obviously don't have that with South Korea. Maybe the expectations are higher because you're hosting a World Cup, but it's also going to be an easier path. Like, having that group based around you being a top seed is going to be massive for Canada when it comes to whatever they might do here. I'm with you on the language. I'm also just having heard some of the fallout around the South Korea job and what happened with Jurgen Klinsmann. I think South Korea might not be all that different from Mexico in that in that if you're a foreign manager, there is going to be a part of the press / footballing infrastructure / fan base that is already turned on you or is waiting to turn on you. Obviously, he would be a foreigner in Canada as well. He would have much more familiarity there. It would be a little bit different. But who knows? Either of these two teams, if Jesse Marsh gets a hold of them, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a run in the World Cup. Because I think both teams are really talented in the way you need to be talented. They've got attacking firepower.
Yeah,
and they can play transitional.
So dangerous, though. You look at the teams that... And it's not just a Red Bull model. We can go and look at Bielsa. We can go look at other managers who use that in-your-face pressing type of football, leave themselves exposed in the back line, all-or-nothing type of play. It's very fun to see, and it's very great when it works, but when it doesn't, it's a fiasco. And Jesse Marsh has had a few of those fiascos. You know, he had it at Leipzig, where there were rumors of a player's revolt, the players turning on him in the locker room. He had it at Leeds, you know, when everything slipped away, and that team ultimately was relegated. That's on his hands as well. So it's a dangerous style, but nonetheless, a style that when it works, it really works, and it really is in your face and pleasing to see.
And I wonder if the folks in South Korea are thinking back to 2002, think about how they did the run then with the kind of energetic style. They used the crowd to kind of get behind them. I wonder if they're thinking, hey, Jesse Marsh has a style that might harken back to kind of the glory days of South Korean football. All right, let's run it back here on Football Americas because we had a very busy weekend abroad for our CONCACAF stars in Europe. We'll start with Josh Sargent, a regular contributor to Run It Back. His 16th Herc League goal of the season for Norwich City as they tied 2-2 against Swansea on Saturday.
Yeah, listen to this. 13 goals, 1 assist since the start of the new year. No player in the U.S. men's national team is hotter. Josh Sargent now 5th place in the championship with Norwich. I'm telling you, I continue to feel he's the most talented 9 in this pool.
One game left in the season. Looks like they're all but a lock for the promotion playoff. In France, if you can see it through the fog, Flaren Balogun with his 5th league assist of the season as Monaco lost 3-2 against Lyon.
Yeah, he's not had the type of season he would like. So 7 goals, 5 assists in league. Ben Yedder is the guy who's been kind of pulling everything, pulling the strings, scoring the goals, 13 goals for him. Monaco will finish in second, though.
Balogun got the start in this game as Monaco trail only PSG in the French top flight. What about the Dutch top flight? Eredivisie, Paxton Aaronson with a brace, his 3rd and 4th goals of the season for Vitesse, who won 3-2 over Fortuna Sittard on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I didn't think it would be Paxton Aaronson and not Brandon Aaronson, the Aaronson that we would be talking about having a brace this season. When it comes to football or in the top flight or in any division for that matter.
Vitesse with a grand total of 2 points on the season. Remember, they had a massive point deduction and will be relegated, but good news for Paxton, he's on loan from Eintracht Frankfurt. Rokas Bukstas had a brace himself, his 6th and 7th goals of the season as Hajduk Split won 5-1 over the weekend. Hurt.
We have to remind ourselves, he's still 19 years old. I mean, he's an Olympic hopeful. Arsenal's been after him as well. Links to the intelligent playmaker for the U.S. 19 years old, Seb. 19.
Getting it done. Hajduk Split right now third in the Croatian top flight. Congratulations to Rokas Bukštas on his brace. The U.S. internationals filled the back of the net. What about the Mexican internationals? Orbelin Pineda, he had a goal. And not just any goal, a playoff goal, as AK lost 3-2 to Pauk in Greece on Sunday.
Yeah, Orbelin. Oh, he gave him the eyes. He gave him the eyes. I'm going far post, sneaks it in near post. He's still one of the better players in the Greek league. Look at this. Looks far post, waves him up. Gonna sneak it in near post. Keeper never saw it coming.
The magician there for IK, although they did lose as Orbelin Pineda scores the goal in Greece. More Mexicans abroad. Johan Vasquez had an assist as Genoa won 3-0 against Cagliari earlier today, a result that means Genoa are staying up.
Safe, baby! Look, it's a smart assist. It's very simple and easy, but how about the finish? In-step, side netting. What a finish.
What are you taking away from the assist?
No, it's a great assist.
Put it right in his stride. Well done, Johan Vasquez.
A great assist.
There.
Better finish.
Genoa's safe, but not everybody else's. We got some relegations we got to talk about. Austin Trusty, Sheffield United, they're going down from the Premier League. Cesar Montes in La Liga with Almeria, they're going down in Spain. And Memo Ochoa in Serie A with Salernitana for a third time in his career. Memo Ochoa is going down. Ah, the sadness of relegation.
Back-to-back relegation for Montes. Austin Trusty, how about this stat? Minus 63 goal differential for Sheffield United. They've given up 97 goals, three games to go. They could hit 100.
I think the least surprising of these three has to be Salernitana in Serie A. They have been destined for the drop for quite some time. But as you heard me say there, the third career relegation for one of the all-time Mexican greats in Memo Ochoa. Plenty more from the European Theater all this week on ESPN FC. Available to you 7 days a week here on ESPN Plus. Time for some Liga MX. Regular season coming to an end over the weekend. Here's some of the key results. America winning 2-1 over Puebla. They clinched first. Chivas won 1-0 over Atlas. A fifth straight win, moving them up into sixth place, which means automatic qualification for the quarterfinals. Plus, I lose a bet. Tigres and Rayados both rolled in their games. They'll face each other in one of the quarterfinals in the 4-5 matchup. Cruz Azul 1-0 winners over Toluca. That was the 2-3 game to end the regular season. Herc, why don't we start at the top of the table with Club America?
That's where you want to start? That's where you want to start?
That's not where I want to start. That's where production wants to start. That was not a set.
You mentioned the bet you lost.
That was not a set. Oh, we're going to get to that. We're going to give Chivas their flowers and New Year money in just a second. But what do you think of Club America's chances to win the double? Would you go as far as to say they are the clear favorite, as it mentions there on the lower third?
I do not think they're clear favorites.
Would you say favorite?
I do not think they are the...
There it is.
Here it is. Let me tell you why my
Who's favorite over them in Liga MX?
Let me tell you my only hesitation here. Okay. Let's start with the most immediate, which would be the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Uh-huh.
Games are tomorrow and Wednesday.
Yep.
They're going to play against Pachuca, who's been a thorn in their side,
of course,
a rock in their shoe. They lose that, they're over.
Okay.
It's over. There is no, hey, are they the favorites to win the double talk?
Okay.
No, it's over. It's that simple.
Same for everybody else this week, but...
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. But they have history when it comes to Pachuca, a history of being eliminated in elimination games against Pachuca. Recent history, long history, whatever you want. And if they get passes, and we're going to talk about Pachuca in a second, but let's say they get past Pachuca, they could potentially see Pachuca again, that same thorn, or they could see Pumas, which kind of did a little blueprint on how teams should face America. Mm-hmm. They could see them again in Liguilla. So based off those two teams, I would say, man, if it wasn't for those two teams being in their road, any other team, I'd say they're clear-cut
favorites. But they're the number one seed. Why are we looking at the teams in their road?
Because it matters how you get there, and they've not looked like the number one seed as of late. Mm-hmm. And that is clear. That is evident. That's why I wouldn't go as far as to say Club America. And I also wouldn't go as far as to say Rayados either, because Rayados is the only team in this competition that is actually down a goal heading into the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And guess who they're going to have to play in Liguilla? They're going to have to play against Tigres, who they don't want to see. And I'll get into that in a second. And then you look at the other side of that, Pachuca is just as bad. Pachuca's calendar, they're going to have to play on Tuesday. CONCACAF Champions Cup. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to play on Thursday, the play-in game. If they lose that game, they're going to have to play on Sunday. If they win that game, they'll have to play midweek again. It's ridiculous what's going on with Pachuca. So I'll go as far as say the only team.
Don't leave yourself in the play-in game.
The only team that I have trust in that I'd say I don't have any qualms in saying it's close to happening would be in the whole CONCACAF Champions Cup competition, Columbus. The Columbus Crew are the only team that I could sit here and say, yeah, I could seriously see that double happening.
Really?
I can't
think Columbus today is closer to winning their league than America is to winning their league?
Because of Pachuca and Pumas. And I know you hate that. I know you hate that. But I don't like the matchup. If America played against Cruz Azul, played against Toluca, I would say that's a matchup that I think America steamrolls them in. Mm-hmm. Like they've done. Like they've proven. But when it comes to Pachuca, there is something about Pachuca. When it comes to Pumas, this Pumas, who it's a clásico, and they'll play in Mexico City. There's something about that where I think I just don't like that for them. I don't like this for America. So I don't like the chances of any Liga MX team winning that double. But maybe I do for Columbus Crew winning the double. Maybe
I like America's chances. One with Pachuca, we've said this before. You have to go away sometimes and get a result. They're gonna have to do it against Pachuca. I know that there's history there, but I'm not gonna sweat over that. Especially when Pachuca has all that could be coming, right? They've got obviously Thursday, which is a guarantee, potentially the game on the weekend, potentially another game after that. Plus they're coming off a not very impressive performance in the regular season finale against Mazatlan. No, that was important. That was important for my primo who had the over in that game and was very disappointed. And also picked Salomon Rondon as an anytime goal scorer and was very disappointed.
So he played like, what, 20 minutes?
Pachuca doesn't necessarily scare me from Club America. And then you look beyond that. It's a one-off in the final. You got Crew or you got
Pachuca
Rayados.
Pachuca doesn't scare
me. No, America's a favorite, dude. America's a favorite. I respect Pachuca, but I'm not going to sit here and say America aren't the favorite in every game left in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And even at Herc, if I look at Liguilla, you're talking to me about worrying about the one versus the eight. I'm not even thinking about that as the America fan. Of course, you got to respect whoever's in front of you.
Okay.
I'm thinking more about who have we always said are the real threats to America? Tigres and Rayados. And one of them, Herc,
really?
Is going home in the quarterfinals. No. Yeah, if we talk about Liga MX on a grand scale, what was the conversation we were having before the season?
It's a three-horse race.
So when I talk about the rosters
that's Liga
that I...
MX. You're
when
I talk about the, who's, you're not saying... Quién es
but one of the biggest
America.
Threats
the threat to
is going
different.
Out in the quarterfinals, guaranteed.
Any Americanista
How can I not feel
you,
good?
Any Americanista will tell you they'd rather play against Tigres than Pachuca. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? It could be Pachuca.
Okay. But I don't fear Pachuca more than you want me to say I fear Pachuca from a historical sense.
No,
the reality
from what you saw a couple days ago.
The reality says that America is much. If you want to go off history, America has no problem with Tigres, right? If you want to go off history,
yeah,
I would much rather play Pachuca in that sense. I would much rather play Pachuca.
All right. Well, we could double that bet if you'd like.
Ooh, speaking of bets, let's get to the bet that I now have to pay up. That's right, the Chivas, who I said would not finish in the top six. Proceeded to go on, a five-game winning streak after we made the bet and finished top six.
Listen.
So did they exceed, meet, or come up short of your expectations? Because they definitely exceeded my expectations. There you go. For the record, Seb pays his bets.
There's an assist here for producer Bet, though. He's got a beer coming his way.
Hey, by the way, barely on what? A Piojo Alvarado
golazo
is the only reason they get in. If Pachuca takes care of business against Mazatlan, you're handing me $100.
False. All they need to do is win. They'll be good. And also, by the way,
Pachuca wins.
Did you watch the game? Piojo Alvarado had a shot that Chicharito Hernandez himself blocked. Okay?
Chicharito did block that shot.
They exceed my expectations?
It was the only thing he did in the game other than piss off everybody.
That's right. We can talk about that.
We'll talk about that. Yeah.
Listen, they didn't meet my expectations. I'm going to be honest, Fernando Gago's team, the only reason we're even having this conversation about expectations is because of the run that they had at the end of this season, going undefeated in five. But if you look at Veljko Panovic's Chivas, first season, third place, gets to a final. Second season, fifth place. Okay? What place did they come in right now? Sixth place. So no,
were you
my
basing
expectations
of this Chivas off of the last Chivas or off the reality of the current team?
What's the difference?
I think you have to base it off the reality of the current
You're right.
Team.
Let's base it off the reality of this team. This team had a...
What do you always say on this show? They're ninth. They're the ninth best team in Liga MX historically. Of course, sixth place exceeds expectations.
No, not when they come from a third place in a final and a fifth place finish. Now, let me tell you why.
Fading fifth.
Hold on. We were told by the Chivas brass that JJ Macias was healthy and back. No go. We were told... All of a sudden, that Chicharito Hernandez
is going to be the savior, right?
Okay, and he's there. That's a big signing for him, and he's there. No go. So why am I going to get excited for a sixth-place finish for a team that the last two seasons has done extremely well? Let's not downplay. I know we always say they're eternal ninth, right? But the last season, last year, calendar year, third place, fifth place, a final. That's a good season. That's a good year for Chivas. So why are we going to hold them to a lesser standard in a year where they come in sixth place? This team is just below my expectations. I thought they would compete a little bit more. And here's the reason. Here's where I thought they would compete a little bit more. It was a CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Well, they ran into the biggest dog in the block.
And what happened to that biggest dog on the block afterwards?
What do you mean?
Well, look at what happened to them. They lost to him. They lost to him.
Right? America lost to Chivas?
Yeah.
I mean, the second leg when it was decided.
Regardless. Okay. Let's not biggest dog. This isn't about you. Okay? This isn't
about you, America. San Jose Earthquakes.
They're below the expectations I had for this team just because of who they have at their disposal and what they've done in the past year. We can give Fernando Gago a pass because it's his first season. We can give Chicharito and JJ Macias a pass because they're coming off an injury and it's still let's wait until they're healed. But I'm not giving Fernando Hierro a pass. You're the one who decided, you know, to get rid of Velko Panovich. You're the one who, in this season, there were talks about you heading to the, you know, the Saudi Pro League. You've placed worse. Chivas is a major brand. You shouldn't be celebrating a sixth place finish.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously exceeded my expectations. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made the bet. I didn't see them winning the last five games like that. It took every one of those results. If there's somebody on Chivas who did exceed expectations, it's Piojo Alvarado.
Without doubt.
And it wasn't like that goal, by the way, massive.
Kind of rival, standard for him now.
Yes, but like if you think about the moment, what it meant, that the pass to the quarterfinals against your rivals, last game of the regular season, that he's been doing it like more and more consistently. When I look at Chivas, if I look at their season and I say, what's the story behind them exceeding my expectations? It's that dude and his performance. And I don't know how far it's going to carry him. I don't know how close to the national team it gets him. But man, if he plays like he did and he makes the type of plays that he's done over the last, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks, man, I'd love to have him in the national team. And I'd love to have him playing minutes, not on the bench, because we've
seen
him in the national team before.
And Mexico doesn't have the luxury.
But not in a role that matters.
Mexico doesn't have the luxury of turning away good players, and he's a good player right now. There are not a lot of Mexican players.
Hot players, right?
There are not a lot of good players in great moments. Without a doubt, I would go as far as to say he's one of the better players in Liga MX. He's the best Mexican player at the moment in Liga MX, without a doubt. Look at the type of goals he is scoring. He is carrying that team.
What about Chicharito? What do you think of his antics? Because it's not his play. But he's kind of taunting the Atlas fans in a moment in this match, which has gone viral, and people all over Mexico are very mad. And I think one of the reasons they're mad is because this was his only contribution. That's the thing. It's like, don't you want Chicharito in a big game like this to have something other than, like, just taunting the opposite fans?
Listen, Chicharito, he's clearly not 100%. When he's 100%, I think we would judge him then. I don't have a problem with this one bit. Chicharito was there for about an hour on the bench getting taunted, getting yelled. The fans were poking the bear. They won. His team won. He clearly has a love for Chivas. Atlas is clearly a heated rival. He does this, saying, I can't hear you. I'm more upset at the fact that no Atlas players besides Dominguez actually got in his face.
Right.
It meant little to those players. Those colors, the moment, the taunting, the rivalry meant so little to those players. Maybe they were so disheartened that they couldn't even go up to him. Only one player, a 23-year-old player who comes from Necaxa, was the only one who showed face. I take more issue with that than I do with what Chicharito Hernandez did.
Chivas favorites against Toluca?
They beat him in the regular season, but I
Chivas the 6th seed, obviously. Toluca the 3 seed.
Listen, the only reason I will say Chivas are favored is because I think... spiritually, the spirit. The spirit is broken in Toluca.
Okay.
They were on a hot start. They were on a hot finish, I should say. And Thiago Volpi, their goalkeeper, was
the leading goal scorer. Missed two penalties. Yeah.
Misses two penalty kicks. That's a tough pill to swallow. Not a good moment if you're Toluca heading into a team that you know has played you off the park and beaten you well. I'll take Chivas.
Okay. He's got Chivas against Toluca in one of the quarterfinals. One of the other quarterfinals is the 4 versus 5. El Clásico Regio. Tigres against Rayados. I think it's pretty obviously the most exciting quarterfinal matchup, but you know this rivalry well. Who do you think's under more pressure here?
Interesting that you say that, because timing is everything. 3 weeks ago, it would have been Ciboldi. Robert Dante Ciboldi is in the
what, coming off the crew elimination.
Coming off an elimination, blowing a lead against Monterrey in El Clásico Regio, and certainly is the guy that you would say he's got a winner, he's out. The last three games, his team has scored 12 goals, three of those being on Rayados themselves. Clearly hot, a team that has muscle memory like few. And if that muscle memory kicks in, no team wants to see him in Liguilla. But do you know who definitely does not want to see him in Liguilla? Rayados de Monterrey. Now, when we talk about pressure, it clearly is for Tano Ortiz, you win or you go home. Mm. And he's got to win the CONCACAF Champions Cup or Liga MX, that trophy, to stay in Monterrey, to stay with this roster. He's the only coach in this tournament, the CONCACAF Champions Cup, that's down a goal right now from the Liga MX side, heading into the final leg in a stadium where they've not really proven themselves. Now, this Clásico Regio, when we go back to the recent years, 2017, they've been eliminated by Tigres four times.
Ooh.
Four times in direct elimination. Tigres does not fear Rayados. There is a fear from Rayados to Tigres. This is the one team they did not want to see.
Is there any advantage here for Tigres based on the fact that they've been eliminated from CONCACAF Champions
Absolutely.
Cup?
Absolutely.
And they don't have to kind of worry about the roster? I guess the counter to that is, these two teams can't really use that as an excuse, right? These are the by far the biggest spenders in North America. If you have roster depth, it's to get through a situation like this. So if Rayados are going to hold their hand up and say, well, we're at a disadvantage, I don't think they're going to find many sympathetic ears.
You're right.
Certainly not in Mexico.
And to your point, you know, I said they need to win a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes a little bit more than that because Javier Aguirre won a trophy and he was still out.
That's right.
You know, he won the CONCACAF Champions League at that moment, that you know, which is now the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and he was still out. And he's a legendary coach in Mexican football. That didn't buy him enough credit. Tano Ortiz, I know it's not him peddling this exciting football that he had in Club America. I know it's not him. It's more us, the press, that Tano Ortiz is supposed to play this way. But certainly, Tata Noriega got rid of Victor Manuel Vucetich because he couldn't provide that.
Right.
He had 40 points in a calendar, or not even a calendar year, in a regular season.
Six-month regular season,
and it wasn't enough for him to stay.
Rayados, they put in a lot of money. You got to have a team that looks like it's been heavily invested in, and maybe that hasn't been the case so far. All right, let's move on to the Golden Boot, shall we? Because we did have a unique situation in Mexico over the weekend with not one, not two, not three, but four different guys tied on 8 goals for the Golden Boot. Diver Cambindo scored a goal for Necaxa, which tied him with Uriel Antuna, Solomon Rondon, and Federico Viñas, who entered the weekend on 8 goals each. Herc, as someone who has won the Golden Boot down in Mexico, what does that number, that low number, tell us about Liga MX?
All right. Funny enough, I was watching this game, and Sergio Canales scored a double, and he's sitting on a hat trick about 35 minutes to go. He scores one more goal, there would have been a 5-way tie for the Golden Boot at 8 goals. Now, you can sit here and say, this means that the forward, the common forward in Liga MX is not as good as before. And I've seen this
rhetoric online. He's no Hercules Gomez, is what we're saying.
I've seen this rhetoric online. And they bring up José Saturnino Cardoso.
I mean, is it not true? It's the obvious answer, right? The forwards aren't as good, or is the other obvious answer that the defenses are better?
That's what it is. I mean, you look at the type of athlete who plays today in Liga MX, much more better than they were before. Defensively, much more tougher to play against. You don't see those type of outrageous scorelines. Saturnino Cardoso, Pepe Cardoso, scored out of those 29 goals. He had I don't want to butcher the number. It was something outrageous in the playoff in the Liguilla system. It's much more difficult with the coaching today, the tactical schemes and systems to defend, the athlete. It's much more difficult to score goals today in Liga MX than it ever was. This is a testament to that. It's very easy to sit here and say, it's because there are no good forwards in Liga MX. I don't believe that's the case. I believe the defender has gotten better. Now, this isn't the lowest, or it is the lowest, but this isn't the first time we've seen these type of low in totals, if you will. A few years ago, it was Berterame and somebody else who tied at 9.
Mm-hmm.
A decade ago, it was me and Chicharito Hernandez at 10, though I will say I only played 705 starts. But what I'm trying to get to is, this is some time coming now where we're no longer seeing those 20-plus campaigns.
Yeah. I remember a conversation that we had, I think it was an MLS Media Day with Alan Pulido.
Yeah.
And we asked him straight up, like, which league is harder to score in, MLS or Liga MX? He obviously wasn't comparing, like, Liga MX now versus Liga MX then.
Right.
But he said that Liga MX was harder to score in.
Yeah.
Not so much because of the individual defenders that you talk about, but the tactics.
Yeah.
He's like, it's just such a different setup down there. It's so much less transitional, so much less open. And maybe that has something to do with why we're seeing such low goal return totals. Just eight, though. In a 17-game season.
And all four of these guys had their opportunity to actually be the sole leader, which is crazy to me. Maybe it's not a typical season because of the double tournament, and Rondon plays a regular season finale. Like, they obviously were resting him for the CONCACAF Champions Cup on Tuesday, but if he plays a regular season finale against the worst defensive team in the league in Mazatlan, he scores his goal.
That's what I thought. I thought Rondon was going to get it, and I thought he'd take care of business. Obviously, did not.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's keep it in Liga MX, shall we? Because we got, as we mentioned at the top of the show, some Hollywood stars investing down south. That's right, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, of course, own Wrexham, have bought a minority stake in Necaxa, along with Eva Longoria, who you saw earlier, Mesut Ozil involved in that group, Kate Upton, Odell Beckham Jr., just to name a few. Reynolds and McElhenney will add their names to that impressive list. And a couple weeks ago, the duo spoke with our Alexis Nunez about their quest to get Wrexham promoted.
So good to see you guys again, because so much obviously has changed. Season 3, right? Who'd have thought? I suppose, Rob, let me start with you, because this started out as your main project. Did you ever think on those days where you were wondering what on earth you guys got yourselves into, that here we would be for a season 3?
Look, you're always betting on success and hoping that this would be a story that we could tell, not just about us getting out of that National League, but really the rise of the club and the town through the ranks and through the leagues. And we just truly believe that we can continue to tell this story as long as we can find stories to tell. And I always find it interesting when people ask me, hey, how long do you think this could go? Because we've been telling stories as human beings for thousands of years. And in some ways, we've been telling the same stories. But the only thing that changes is the points of view. And out of the thousands of people that live in Wrexham, there are thousands of millions of points of view. There are ways in which we can tell stories about that town for as long as the audience is there to support it. And we believe we can continue to do so for a long time.
And Ryan, of course, I suppose for you, did you honestly think as well? Because I know, like I said, there have been some dark days for you guys where you were wondering if you were going to have to be making Deadpool movies to your 100 years old to just afford this.
No, yeah. I mean, like, in some ways, you know, Rob calling me years ago and saying, do you want to partner up on this, you know, pretty outside the box idea was both the best and the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I am so grateful for the home that North Wales and Wrexham and this club have in my heart. But my heart can't take it half the time. It is very intense. It is an incredibly intense ride that, you know, doesn't seem to wane. You know, I mean, it's every single match. My mood for the day, sometimes the week, is determined by what happens on that pitch. And, you know, I'm really grateful for this particular season coming up, because we're going to be much closer to the actual results that are happening on the field. As we go, this particular round of Welcome to Wrexham is as close to real time as you can possibly make it. So, you know, as we're shooting the midway through the season, we don't know how this ends. We have no, we are as in the dark as everyone else is. So this particular season coming up gets, I think, somehow becomes more edge of your seat entertaining than the two seasons previous.
When you guys played against Chelsea in preseason and Manchester United, and with respect, it was a weakened United and Chelsea, given the fact it's preseason, but that kind of was a reality check for you of where you guys are and where you really do want to be, which is the Premier League, right? How much did that affect you, I suppose? Did you feel like you had to go back to the drawing board? Did you feel overwhelmed? And did it affect, I suppose, your 5-10-year plan in terms of investment?
No, not at all. We knew that the level of quality of those clubs was going to far exceed where we were at that particular time. And that's no knock on the players and the management of Wrexham. It's just that that was not the infrastructure that we had built up at a level at which we were ready to succeed. It's actually very different. The game is very different in the National League than it is in the Premier League. So you bring in players and you run a very specific style of football to get out of that league, which was very different than the way that they play in higher leagues. So we expected there to be some growing pains. I didn't expect to get thrashed 5-0 by no. 19 and 20 year olds, but that is what happened, and that's the sport, and that's what. And but then again, we did beat Manchester United.
Yeah,
right.
So we're also one of the most devastating games that we've had because we lost Paul Mullen for a good long time due to some breaking every rib in his body, which was no good for anyone.
No, it wasn't.
That was the Paul.
It's fair to say they've surpassed expectations, considering it's your first time, you know, back in League Two. Has that surprised you at all? And
there's nothing more depressing as a fan or a supporter when you hear the ownership group of the team that you're supporting saying, well, we're in a rebuilding year and this is the 3-year plan. Like, no one wants to hear that. It's just not the way sport, it's not human nature. I want to win right now. I don't care about 5 years from now. And yes, you're going to draft this offensive lineman who in 4 years is going to be the cornerstone of this team. I'm like, I don't care. I want to win right now. So that's what we're focused
on. And also football tends to be a more of a right now sport. You know, I notice it as opposed to sort of the big American franchises, those kinds of clubs, there's a much more of a, oh, well, like let's start building toward, you know, 2029, you know, so we could really compete. Like, no. In football, particularly at Wrexham, it's we want blood and we want it now. Let's go.
Parting shot here. Women's Champions League semifinals over the weekend. Lindsey Horan and Lyon won 2-1 against PSG on Sunday. Oh. That means they won 5-3 on aggregate and are headed to the final against Barcelona, who advanced, I'll say, controversially past Emma Hayes' Chelsea side. The final will be May 25th at San Mamés in Bilbao, Spain. Lindsey Horan and Lyon against Barcelona.
I'm sure Emma was chill and tranquil about it. Nothing to say.
Oh, no. Very upset. Obviously, as you would be when you go out in the semifinals of the Champions League. Coming up on Thursday's edition of the show, we will be talking Champions League. Alphonso Davies could be going up against Real Madrid there. We're talking CONCACAF Champions Cup. We'll know who survived the semifinals. We'll also be looking ahead to some news about the Women's World Cup. Apparently, that U.S.-Mexico bid might be delayed until 2031. And, Herka, before we get out of here, I do want to give you a chance to show off what you're wearing.
Whoa! Let's go, Sol! My Oakland Soldiers! The beautiful people of Oakland sent me this.
It didn't make the rundown. Remind me, what happened when DC United and Seattle played this weekend? Who won?
They played?
That's
DC
right!
Still has a team.
That's right! DC United,
still has
baby!
A team?
2-1!
DC
Big
still
winners
has a
over
team?
Seattle. How many wins Seattle got so far? Is it 1-9?
How many championships does DC United have?
Is that good? DC United has 4, which are more championships than the Seattle Sounders. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Not in this
we'll
millennium.
See you back here on Thursday.